Good afternoon and welcome to the National Press Club. My name's Clayton Boyce and I'm president of the National Press Club and news editor at Knight Ridder Tribune News Service. I'd like to welcome club members and their guests in the audience today, as well as those of you who are watching on C-SPAN or listening to this program on National Public Radio or the Global Internet Computer Network. Before introducing our head table, I'd like to remind our members of upcoming speakers. On Wednesday, Cheryl Leach, the inventor of Barney, will discuss kids and television. This is our annual children's lunch, and we are expecting 170 children in this room tomorrow. And I would suggest to Prime Minister Rabin that if he would like to show his skills as a peacemaker, that he come back tomorrow and try to keep the peace when 170 children are all trying to shake hands with a purple dinosaur. On Monday, November 22nd, Catherine McKinnon, professor at University of Michigan Law School, will discuss violence against women. And on Wednesday, December 3rd, Phil Satre, president of Harrah's Casinos, will discuss the future of casino gambling in the United States. Other upcoming luncheon speakers include Sarajevo newspaper editor Zlatko Dizdarević, U.S. Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders, FBI Director Louis Free, and TV producer Norman Lear, and a late addition, talk show host Larry King, will be answering questions for once. For the convenience of our audience, transcripts and audio and video tapes of this luncheon are available. The transcripts will be available for fax transmission within 2 hours. The transcripts or tapes can be ordered by calling 800-500-9911. And for those of you in the room today, a transcript of the Prime Minister's speech, but not the question and answer period, will be available as you leave. If you have any questions for our speaker, please write them on cards provided at your table and pass them up. I'll ask as many as time permits. I'd now like to introduce our head table guests and ask them to stand briefly when their names are called. From your right, Sakeuchi Yomiuri Shimbun. Jeff Winograd, Focus Israel Newsletter. Wes Pippert, University of Missouri and former UPI Bureau Chief in Jerusalem. Deborah Kalb, Jewish Telegraph Agency. Oded Ben-Ami, Media Advisor to the Prime Minister. Joseph Polakoff, writer for Jewish newspapers. Mrs. Leah Rabin, wife of the Prime Minister. Reginald Stewart, Assistant News Editor, Knight Ridder Newspapers, and Chairman of the National Press Club Speakers Committee. Itamar Rabinovich, Israeli Ambassador to the United States. Jonathan Salant, Newhouse News Service, and member of the National Press Club Speakers Committee, who arranged today's luncheon. Jonathan's parents are here. I thought that they would at least applaud him. Where are they? Susan Bennett of Knight Ridder Newspapers. Osiris Makar Alaram. Amy Fickling of Stevens Publishing. And Chaim Shivi Yadiet Akaranov. I'd also like to thank staff members Melissa Bender, Pat Thornsberry, Melanie Abdo-Dermott, and Jeff Tarbell for organizing today's luncheon. A year ago last August, the last time Yitzhak Rabin appeared at the National Press Club, he had just been elected Prime Minister of Israel on a platform to bring peace to the Middle East. Well, I can say that here is one politician who has done his best to live up to his campaign promises. Just a few short weeks ago, we thrilled to the sight of President Clinton, Prime Minister Rabin, and Palestine Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat standing together on the South Lawn of the White House. There, two bitter enemies signed an agreement that they hoped would lead to peace. Enough, Prime Minister Rabin said. Negotiations are continuing in an attempt to meet a December 13th deadline for agreeing on how to set up self-rule in the Gaza Strip and the city of Jericho. The hopes of millions of Israelis and Palestinians rest on the successful outcome of these negotiations. Our speaker has been a fixture in Israeli political life since 1968, when he retired from military service and became Israeli ambassador to the United States. In 1974, he became Minister of Labor in the government of Golda Meir and succeeded her as Prime Minister after her untimely death a few months later. Mr. Rabin was Prime Minister when Israeli commandos staged the successful raid on Entebbe Airport. Rabin's Labor Party lost its parliamentary majority in 1977, and he became a leader of the opposition. In 1984, he became Defense Minister in a national unity government. In 1992, he led the Labor Party back to power and returned as Prime Minister. The Prime Minister was born in Jerusalem in 1922 and began his military career 18 years later. He fought in the 1948 Israeli War for Independence and the 1956 Sinai Campaign, and was Army Chief of Staff during the 1967 Six-Day War. The prophet Isaiah once predicted, "Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Suffice to say that our speaker today is doing his best to make those words come true in the Middle East. Please join me in welcoming back to the National Press Club Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin.
President of the National Press Club, my colleagues to the head table, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for having me again, only after a little bit of 1 year. After me, in accordance to what I heard, you'll have to deal with dinosaurs, lawyers, casinos. So, it reminds me almost some of the phenomena of the Middle East. But I would like to recognize a family here, Mr. and Mrs. Katz, that since 1982, their son is missing in action. It's one of the scars and the wounds of the wars that we have experienced, which have not yet been solved and should be solved. I refer to the Israelis who paid heavily for the existence of the war, and I believe that the same applied to others who were engaged in war. You listen to my record. I was for 27 years a soldier, and believe me, in addition to victories and sometimes setbacks, we who have fought, and I believe there are many who think to me on the other side, know the real face, the ugly face of war, the misery, the suffering, the pain that wars brings about those who fight them, and even more so when civilians are caught between the fighting forces. Therefore today, even though There is no peace and tranquility in the region. Allow me to focus on the efforts to bring about peace. Peace is a word that everyone uses. I believe many things have been done in contradiction to peace, undercarrying the peace word without meaning to do what is needed to achieve peace. The present government of Israel, when we took office, we decided to give new meaning to the negotiations that started in the Madrid Peace Conference. We believe that peace can be achieved only when the two sides are ready to compromises, painful compromises. If every side will stick to its basic perception, description, axioms of the past, without changing the way of trying to achieve peace, peace will never be achieved. This was and is our approach. We found, when I entered the office, we found negotiations with four Arab partners. But the key lied and lies with two, with the Palestinians or the Syrians, to begin a breakthrough in what took place almost 2 years of talks without any real breakthrough. Either with the Syrians or the Palestinians, Jordan couldn't move without first meaningful advancing our negotiations with the Palestinians. Lebanon could not move without getting the green light from Damascus. And we are in our explorations vis-à-vis Syria, vis-à-vis the Palestinians, we came to the conclusion that we have to take a major step, a different in kind and in substance that we took before. Allow me to say that I wish that peace had to be done, had to be achieved with friends. It will be the easiest thing to achieve. But under our circumstances, peace has to be achieved with enemies, with bitter enemies of Israel in the past. Without it, peace will not be achieved. Whoever we would turn to was an enemy of Israel. We were engaged at war. We lost thousands of people. They lost thousands of people. And allow me to say, we decided to do it with the PLO. It was a major decision, unexpected. After 30 years of terror, confrontation, we came to the conclusion that on the Palestinian side, there is one partner that practically guided, dictated to the Palestinian delegation in Washington whatever to say, to formulate every sentence, to write every word. And we decided In the Jewish tradition, there is a name, Purim Spiel, a play of masks in certain Jewish holiday, to recognize that it's better to put out the masks that cover the Palestinian delegation and to negotiate with those who really sent them and guided them. It was not an easy decision to the Israelis. Many oppose. I had 40, 50,000 people who demonstrated against me. We are a democracy and it's legitimate. But we made a major decision. We had to have a breakthrough with the Palestinians. For 45 years, I've heard from every quarter in the Arab world, in the United States, in Europe, that the heart, the crux of the Arab-Israeli conflict is the conflict between the Palestinians and Jews, Palestinian and Israel. We decided to tackle this problem, at least to remove once and forever this legend. If it's right or wrong, I will not argue. Allow me to say that the handshaking on the lawns of the White House was only the beginning. It has not yet solved all the problems. It was a major move, but has to be translated into realities on the ground. What we want is simple. Let the Palestinians run their own life. I don't see any reason, any justification. And the purpose of the Zionist movement was not to be a government that will run other people's life, the Palestinian life. We would like to move, as we are committed to, by the letter of invitation to the Madrid Peace Conference, with the Palestinians to a permanent solution of the conflict between them and us. The first phase, interim self-government arrangement to the Palestinians. We are ready. Let them run their own life. But on one issue, Israel will not give up on its security. Therefore, we stress that the settlements will remain, at least for the period. This is without arguing what will be in the permanent solution. We didn't want to repeat the painful, the traumatic experience of the price of peace with Egypt when we had to uproot settlements to destroy a meat. All the settlements will remain. Israel will carry overall responsibility for the security of the Israelis in the settlements and in their movement in the territories. Israel will be responsible for the external security. This is our position, and we would like to achieve the agreement about the implementation of the first phase, the Gaza-Jericho first, and to create a situation that in the Gaza Strip, where 750,000 Palestinians live and 5,000 Israelis, to let them run Gaza. The greater Gaza city is over 250,000 Palestinians and no one Israeli. Khan Yunis, Deir el-Balah, Rafah, the refugee camps. They want to run. They would like to be run by themselves. This is what we want. But at the same time, to keep the vital interest of our security. I believe that at this stage, to prove that agreement that was reached can be implemented is more important than to sign another agreement. We are for other agreements. We would like to have peace with the three additional Arab neighboring countries to Israel, to Egypt, and as you know, with Egypt, we live for 14 and a half years in peace. And it shows that peace is not an illusion. Peace can be achieved, maintained, when the leaders of the countries and the peoples believe in peace and ready to make sacrifices for peace. We paid painful price for peace with Egypt, and I believe the late Prime Minister of Israel, Menachem Begin, is more than has to be given all the credit for his courage to take then the decision to pay such a price for peace. We will continue with our negotiations with Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. But above all, we are in the need to continue the negotiation with the Palestinians. It's a very sensitive period. On one hand, there are expectations on the part of the Israelis, on the part of the Palestinians. On the other hand, it is not yet implemented. And there are forces among the Palestinians, especially the extreme Islamic groups, the Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, the 10 rejectionist Palestinian organizations, that their headquarters in Syria come up against the agreement, escalate their terror activities with one purpose, political purpose in mind, to undermine, to bring about the cancellation of the agreement, to put obstacles on the road to achieve it. The Hamas will focus on killing Israelis, hoping the kind of reaction of the settlers that lost their dear ones, and to start a vicious circle that will lead to detract the negotiations and to prevent to achieve agreement about the implementation of the Declaration of Principles. Today, the Hezbollah tried again attack from Lebanon. We responded. Our Air Force did not hesitate to attack Hezbollah targets in the Baqa near the Syrian border. I don't see any contradiction between continuation of the peace negotiation with the Palestinians to implement the Declaration of Principles, fighting on one hand the terrorism that their purpose is one, to undermine the peace process, to stop it. There is no contradiction. One complements the another. Fighting those who fight against peace and talks with the Palestinians who are committed to the peace to the agreement that was reached and want to implement it with us. I'm glad that yesterday, today, tomorrow, small teams on the two sides, Palestinian and Israelis, will continue their efforts. Yesterday and today in Paris, Palestinian and Israelis in the Economic Committee are starting to negotiate the relations between the two entities. Peace has got many enemies in the region. We have to overcome them. I spoke today to a Middle Eastern, mainly Arab group. And I said to them that what I expect, the Arab countries, the Arab peoples, is to support the agreement, to encourage those who are engaged in peace. And I would like to mention the amount of readiness, assistance that Egypt, the President Mubarak, are helping both sides and other sides facilitate the possibility of meetings between the various partners to the peace negotiations. We would like also to thank the United States administrations of the past, the present Clinton administration, the Secretary of State, to support all the efforts to bring about peace. It's a fragile period. Many enemies of peace would like to escalate, to inflame again the hatred of 100 years of terror and animosity, and not to overcome them, and not to allow to open a new chapter in the relations between Palestinians and Israelis. I, the Prime Minister, our government, are determined to continue to fulfill what we are committed to. We really want a change in the interrelationships. We would like to see different kind of relations between Palestinians and Israelis. We would like to see, with all the complexity of building it, peaceful coexistence in an area in which Palestinians and Israelis live together, crisscross one another daily in their movement, in their work. We would like to see a new chapter in the oldest conflict between Israelis and Arabs, and I believe it will be achieved. It will take time. We shall have to overcome oppositions of different people by different ways on both sides. And I have said on Friday in the press conference with the President Clinton, I believe that we and the Palestinians passed the point of no return on our road to implement our agreements. This is the case. Hopefully, it will open, it has opened, new doors, new approach by one or more Arab countries. It will facilitate reaching peace treaties with them, and in the process to bring a healing to those who lost their dear ones, to those who were wounded, and to see the families of missing in action, Katz, Baumel, Feldman, Ron Arad, and others, including on the Arab side, coming back home and end the suffering, the pain, and the losses of the past wars. This is our hope. We believe in it, and we will do it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Prime Minister, you said this morning at the meeting with Arab journalists that I believe that we, meaning President Clinton, Secretary Christopher, and yourself, have decided a certain pattern that would lead to a resumption of negotiations. What did you three conclude on how to move the Syrian track specifically ahead?
I said, and I repeat what I have said, that I see the greater importance today in the implementation of the agreement with the Palestinians. I believe that in the Middle East, we don't need archives of agreements that none of them has been implemented. Therefore, this is the first priority. I don't see any contradiction between focusing on negotiations for the implementation of the agreement with the Palestinians and negotiations with other Arab countries, including Syria. Believe me, I see great strategic importance to Israel, I believe also to Syria, in reaching peace treaty between our two countries. But at the same time, I cannot but ask myself, why Syria doesn't come in support of the PLO? In support of the PLO decision to sign the agreement with us? Why Syria allows the 10 rejectionist Palestinian organization Freedom Assistance in coming up, attacking, not Israel, Arafat, the PLO, for signing the agreement? Why they allow them to carry out terror activities and to increase terror activities? And saying clearly that the purpose of their terror is to destroy the agreement, to prevent its implementation. Why they continue to assist Hezbollah to attack our forces, to continue their fighting against us? Many people speak about CBM, confidence-building measures. What will be more confidence-building measures on the part of the Syrian, not vis-à-vis us, vis-à-vis the Palestinian, vis-à-vis the PLO of Tunisia, not to allow the kind of freedom, the use of radio station that broadcast from Syria to the Palestinians in the territories against the agreement, against its implementation, allowing Ahmad Jibril to say on television that the fate of Arafat will be the fate of Sadat, his own people will assassinate him. I don't want to be the defender of Arafat, but I can't understand how Syria can allow it and to pretend that we, Israel, is not interested in peace negotiation with it. We are ready, we'll continue negotiations with the Syrians, but the Syrians have to prove that they support another Arab partner decision to reach an agreement with Israel, not to do the opposite. I believe that there will be an accordance of certain timetable that will renew negotiation with Syria. We are ready to do it now without preconditions.
How will keeping the settlers in place ensure the security of Israel?
Let's distinguish between the question of the security of Israel and our responsibility to the security of the settlers. The security of Israel is vis-a-vis a military threat. 85% of our defense budget is spent to have the capability to deter Arab countries' armed forces, might be in the future even in addition to them in Islamic countries, and I refer to those Arab countries that have not signed peace treaty with Israel. We don't need the F-16 and the F-15 and the F-4 and the Skyhawks and the Merkava tanks against the Palestinians. This is to deter war, and once it will be enforced on us to win it decisively, we would like, and as a military man I would tell you, if there is something that can be called the best war, is the war that was prevented, the war that was avoided. With the settlers, we have the question of their security. It's not the security of Israel. It's the security of the settlers. We are responsible to that, and we'll do it. And I explained what are the guidelines, what are included in the Declaration of Principles, that we carry the overall responsibility to the security of the Israelis in the settlements, in the territories, and external security.
When Mr. Arafat was here, he spoke a great deal about Jerusalem. What is your stand now on Jerusalem? Is it negotiable?
As part of the DOP, for the period of the interim arrangements for self-government of the Palestinians, Jerusalem remains united under Israel sovereignty. The Palestinian Authority Council will have no jurisdiction over Jerusalem. I believe in the first time that by agreement with an Arab partner, we reached it even for the interim period. In the Camp David, there was no agreement about it. There were three letters attached to the Camp David Accords, one by Mr. Begin, stressed the Israeli position, one by President Sadat, stressed the Arab position, one by President Carter, that did not give to Israel the right of sovereignty all over Jerusalem. We have never had it from any American president. The United States realizes the realities, but the U.S. has never recognized it, has never agreed to move the American embassy even to the western part of Jerusalem. This time, at least for the interim agreement, interim period, we reached the agreement. Our position should not be put in any doubt. We see Jerusalem united under Israel's sovereignty and our capital forever.
You have spoken of preventing war by being prepared for it, but won't the recent agreement to purchase the F-15I fighter bombers from the U.S. fuel more arms acquisition race in the Mideast with the Arab with your Arab neighbors?
I believe that today in the Middle East there is the most intensive an extensive arms race than in any part of the world in a context of regional conflicts. Allow me to remind you just about the United States. Then less than a year or a year, a little bit over a year ago, you agreed to sell 72 F-15Es or S to Saudi Arabia. We are talking about much smaller figures. We cannot afford what the Saudis can afford, and I'm not arguing. You have arms deals between Russia and Iran, Russia and Syria. You have supplies of arms to the countries of the region, especially today by North Korea, Scud Seas to Iran, to Syria. Agreement between North Korea and Iran to develop the Nordong ground-to-ground missile of 1,300 kilometers, which will allow the Iranians to fire ground-to-ground missiles from Iran against Israel, from Libya against Israel. Iran tries, in addition to its activities and support of extreme Islamic groups in various Arab countries, including in Somalia today, to undermine moderate Arab regimes. Their policy was formulated by the president of Iran, Rafsanjani, describing the United States as the great Satan and Israel is the small one. They are against the very existence of Israel. They are against the whole peace process. They are against the agreement between the Palestinians and us. In this world, I would like to continue. I'm committed to continue efforts to achieve peace, but from a standpoint of strength. Israel's military strength is the only assurance that there will be peace, that peace will be signed, and peace will be maintained.
You said that Iran is aiding Islamic extremists in Somalia. How are they aiding them, and what is the proof of this?
We have more than reasons to believe that Iran supporting its national Islamic extreme movements in Algeria, they almost seized power. In Tunisia, they are relatively weak. In Libya, they have enough of their own. They don't need export of leaders from the outside, and you know who is the one. In Egypt, they try by terror activities to undermine the Egyptian economy, to bring about a change to the moderate and progressive regime of President Mubarak. They are a minority, but this is what they are trying. Among the Palestinians, the Hamas and the Islamic Jihad against the peace process, against the agreement with the PLO. In Lebanon, Hezbollah, Sudan fell into their hands. You'll see Iranians there. It serves as a springboard for their activities and support of other movements in North Africa and in the Middle East. All of them assisted by Iran, all these movements have representation in Tehran. And we have all the reasons to believe that General Idid gets directly or indirectly support from Iran or the pro-Iran Islamic extreme movements.
Can Arafat take the wheel and lead his people as of December 13th? Are they ready, And can they enforce security?
First, we have to reach an agreement about the detail of the Gaza-Jericho first. On the one hand, to let them run the life of the Palestinians. On the other hand, to have the kind of arrangements that we can carry our responsibility on the security of Israelis and external security. We made the agreement, taking the chance in the belief that they would be able to control their own people and to run their life. This is the major risk that we have taken. We would like to give them the chance, for the first time, that somebody in the Middle East offers, when it is possible, to let Palestinians run the life of Palestinians. Not in a context, but in a context of permanent solution, in a context of interim arrangement. The whole wisdom, the whole idea of having the interim agreement is to create peaceful coexistence between Israelis and Palestinians with the sake of facilitating later on negotiations of permanent solution. This is the whole idea. It was imbued in the Camp David Accords. It is imbued in the letter of invitation to the Madrid Peace Conference.
Do you consider Arafat's condemnation of the recent murder of Haim Mizrahi sufficient?
I knew with whom we are making an agreement. I'm not referring only to personalities, but to an organization. I knew that they don't control all the Palestinians, no doubt, those who come up openly against the agreement, and they carry out most, if almost all, of the terror activities since September 13. I know that he might not be in control of every one of the Fatah, but we cannot tolerate the basic principle that once we sign an agreement, we took upon ourselves commitment that we will not carry them out. Credibility is the name of the game, the key for the future. Therefore, I believe that he has, in addition to what he did, to make sure that it will not happen again as far as it is related to people that come under his control, under his instruction.
How far has, changing the topic here, how far has the absorption of Russian immigrants progressed, particularly suitable housing and employment?
Israel, in the last 4 years, since the end of 89, has bought and started to absorb 500,000 immigrants from what used to be the Soviet Union, and additional immigrants from other parts of the world, including Ethiopia. It is vis-à-vis the total population of Israel, Jews and non-Jews, is more than 10%. Try to imagine the United States in 4 years to absorb 25 million immigrants that come is very little, that come without their rights of social security, of anything, that they acquired there. From our budget of about this year, 120 billion shekels, you can divide it almost by three to know it, the figure in dollars. Over 10 billion shekels is appropriated for absorption of newcomers. If you'll ask me that we have succeeded, no, not yet. It takes time. I'll give you two examples. One, before the Russian immigration started, Israel had doctors per capita more than any country in the world. I repeat the famous saying that every Jewish mother would like her son to be a doctor. You are right. Now she prefers him to be a lawyer. The number of doctors of medicine that came was about 12,000, almost doubling the number. We are trying, but we can't find jobs to every one of them. Otherwise, we'll have per every, I don't know, quarter, every street, a doctor, and we cannot finance all of them. We do it gradually. There are 40,000 engineers. 3,000 of them are mining engineers. We have no one mine. I've said many minefields, but no one mine. Many thousands of engineers that worked in heavy industry in Russia. We don't have heavy industry. The process of adjustment takes time. But I believe that not only quantitatively, but qualitatively, Israel gained a lot, and the real potentialities of this new wave of immigrants will appear in due time. It starts to appear. If 70,000 families took a mortgage, bought an apartment, it shows that they feel more secure, confident in their future. 70,000 means about half of them by now. You have to bear in mind that age-wise, 36% of the 500,000 are above the age of 45. 25% are above the age of 55. And we have to absorb them as equal citizens of Israel. We have to finance the social security with billions of shekels to pay them what they deserve in accordance to our laws. They didn't bring even 2 rubles from the social security that the Soviet Union used to owe them. It's a prolonged process. I'm not saying that we have succeeded to do it in the best way. We give heavy lot of subsidy to their mortgages. You have to bear in mind we cannot ignore the young generations of Israelis that serve for 3 years, military service, as draftees. They have to be assisted too. And there are limitations to the financial capabilities of Israel. We didn't discuss, we changed the order of national priorities domestically. We don't throw money to the territories. We don't believe that this is the real goal of Israel in spending money. We invest in education. We added to 7 billion shekels budget of education in 1.5 years, almost 3 billion shekels. We would like to have a revolution in our education system in 3 years, to modernize, to increase the hours, to see the teacher, the women, men that are the teachers of the future generation of Israel, paid reasonably. We expanded dramatically the infrastructure of transportation budget, and we would like to fight unemployment. These are the three goals, not money for the territories. Education, transportation, employment, jobs.
Could you please restate Israel's policy on nuclear weapons and discuss any nuclear threat posed by the Arab states in the Mideast?
Israel policy was and is that we will not be the first to introduce nuclear weapons to the context of the Arab-Israeli-Islamic-Israeli conflict. At the same time, we offered time and again to have a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East. Today, we are ready to sign on a bilateral basis agreement about nuclear-free zone in the Middle East with all the Arab and Islamic countries who are relevant to the issue to have a bilateral supervision that will be decided by agreement between them and us. In addition, we signed the chemical warfare agreement, in which within limited period of time after its ratification there will be no chemical or biological means in Israel or means of their production. We did not make it condition in signing it on the signature of the Arab countries.
Before asking the final question, I'd like to present you with a certificate of appreciation for speaking here today. A book, The Eye on Washington, The Presidents Who've Known Me, by New York Times photographer George Thames. And a National Press Club mug. I'm sure you have a whole set by now.
No, since you changed from a tie to a mug.
We'll try to change again before you're back. Playing off my introduction, you joked earlier that there are dinosaurs, lawyers, and gamblers in Mideast politics. Who, I'd like to know, is the dinosaur?
The dinosaur was disappeared. And why? One Israeli company started to use it for its publicity. And few rabbis stood up and said, dinosaur is not kosher. Therefore, because dinosaur is not kosher, at least it doesn't exist on the Israeli side.